On the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muesch, and I'm in for Steve Bertrand, who is on the mend. There's like rumors he's coming back, maybe Friday, maybe next week. Steve, come back. Come back. So we've got a great show today. We're going to be talking to a couple of entrepreneurs who are part of a movement that's happening right now in Chicago to make the manufacturing industry more innovative, more entrepreneurial. So we're going to hear about that coming up in the show. And we're going to have Andrew Herman with us, who always brings in great stuff from the neighborhoods. I mean, it's one of the best parts of living in Chicago is to really dive deep into the neighborhoods. And that's what DNA Info is great at doing. And Kim, there's a lot of women in the news right now, and I figured, you know what, let's do a little girl talk about it. Did you see Michelle Obama's speech last night?
I did. I thought she was phenomenal.
Right. There was, I felt, a kind of emotion to it that was so authentic and so real, and I think that's what people are connecting to, because in a world in which the big message is we need more authenticity, she delivered that. I mean, didn't you feel something from her?
Absolutely. And, you know, coming as also being a mother and hearing her talk personally about her girls and how she felt.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, you couldn't help but to feel a connection, a strong connection to her.
Yeah.
No question about it. Suzanne, can I just interrupt for 1 second while we're talking about this? It appears that Lieutenant Governor Eric Holcomb is going to replace Mike Pence on the GOP ticket in Indiana. That has just been announced. So it's Lieutenant Governor Eric Holcomb now running for governor of Indiana on the Republican side.
Okay, I have to say that when you first brought that news, I thought you were saying he was going to replace Pence on the ticket.
No. Running for governor now in Indiana. Don't want to confuse anybody.
Okay. Good thing we clarified that. Let's talk about another woman in the news right now. We've got Marissa Mayer at Yahoo. And, you know, she's been under fire forever. You know, we started reporting on her back in the day when she was telling her employees that she didn't want anyone working from home, when she was pregnant with twins and said she was only going to take a 2-week maternity leave, which I thought was not good for the women of America. But now I'm almost feeling a little empathy for her.
You know, it's a hard thing to do because, you know, until you're in those shoes of being a mom and especially having twins, like, it's easy to say what you would or you wouldn't do. And then once you're kind of in that role, then, you know, you do have empathy and you do change your mind about things. And
yeah.
When you're in that public role and people are watching every single thing that you do, it's tough.
It is tough. And now with the sale of Yahoo, all the stuff with the exclamation point after it, you know, you feel for her. They recorded, I was wondering how they did this, but they recorded an investor conversation and then aired some of it. They must have known that was happening. But, you know, you hear on the call the pressure that she's under. You know, she's running a company that affects hundreds of thousands of people's lives, all of these employees, lots of pressure from stakeholders and shareholders. And you layer on top of that the fact that she's got little kids at home. And I'm not making an excuse. There are lots and lots of working mothers out there with a lot less resources than she has. But you listen to what she's juggling. And I have to say, I feel a little badly for how hard at least we came down on her when she was seemingly so anti-women.
Well, you know, maybe things are going to change when Hillary Clinton, if Hillary Clinton becomes president.
I like the when.
Well,
I like
sorry,
the when.
No.
It's all good.
if or when Hillary Clinton becomes president, maybe that was a faux pas. But, you know, maybe people will see a different side of women who try to balance and juggle it all. I mean, we see Michelle Obama trying to do it. There's other women out there, but, you know, this is the first time there's going to be a female president. So maybe the perception will change just as it did with the first African-American president.
Right. You know? Did you hear this morning what they were now starting to refer Bill? Who knew what he was going to be called if Hillary wins? What will we call Bill Clinton? Did you hear
What's
title?
The suggestion?
So they're calling him the first gentleman.
Oh, that's good.
Do
I
you
like
think
that.
So? I was, well, what?
Well, considering his past, that may not be the best title for him, but I like it.
Right. I felt like that there weren't so many choices. I mean, what are you going to do, call him the first husband, the
first man?
Right. So I thought gentleman actually was a nice working title.
I agree. I like that.
I wonder if he had any say in that. First, you know, you just wonder how all of that works. Actually, it was funny when Michelle Obama was on the James Corden. I hope everyone saw that, his karaoke, car karaoke with her. And he was asking her how they got their secret security, you know, nicknames. And, you know, it's a good question. I've wondered, too. And she said they come up with it, and then, but they can approve or not approve.
So right. And I think they all had the same, I remember what, they all have to start with the same letter, right?
Yes.
Wasn't there an R or something
yes.
with them?
Yeah. And she was Renaissance.
Yeah.
I think that fits her.
That fits her, definitely.
So, look, I was thrilled to see the kind of passion and authenticity, because I think that at the end of the day, that is what the voters are starving for. And although she's not a politician, just to see people up on that stage who are willing to actually talk, sometimes I just want to shout and say, talk to me like I am a normal person. I don't need that politician voice. I don't need the yelling. Just talk to me. And I think that's what she did with a capital T.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
And then we're going to see what the rest of the convention looks like. So, you know, it's obvious that tonight's going to be another big night. And, you know, the speakers, I think, are really trying to paint this different picture and a different view. And, you know, we heard it all week last week about Donald Trump. And I feel like we're all ready for a different conversation.
Yeah. And you know what? I think once both conventions are over, everybody can just absorb what they've heard on both sides and can take it in and then kind of stand back and look, and it'll be easier to make a decision one way or the other.
I agree. And the other question I have is, you know, for states like Illinois, where the assumption is that this is a blue state, and how does that empower voters? You know, part of what we absolutely need to do right now is to get people to vote and to get people out, exercising that right as a citizen, signing up to vote, which I think the deadline for that is September 1st. And you need to get people out there voting. I mean, it's one of the fundamental rights of our country. And even if you feel like you're in a state where a, quote, decision has already been made, that is not a reason not to go to the polls.
Absolutely. And I think, you know what they say about, you know, what happens when you assume. I don't think you can assume anything, especially in this election. And
if
you don't vote, then you can't complain.
I agree. So, Jill, maybe we just got a couple of new voters. I feel like we may have just done something very good for humanity.
Let's hope so.
Let's hope so. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muchen. I am sitting in for Steve Bertrand. And look, Andrew Herman and I, he's from DNA Info, we pass each other in the green room typically. And I also feel, Andrew, when we say green room, I think people are picturing something a little different than the action. Not that there's nothing wrong with the green room.
It's a lot nicer than it used to be.
Right. Didn't it get like rehab?
Oh, yeah.
Point?
It's a collection of things in there now that you can look at.
So. There are. And yeah. I think a lot of them were actually bought. They were bought at a resale shop or something. They had a very low budget.
It has that look. I will say that.
It does have that special look. Uh-huh. So speaking of resale, I want to talk about this Pilsen furniture shop called Accent Minded. There's so much to talk about. First of all, let's just talk about the concept of the business itself and then also about what's going on in Pilsen.
Sure. So this is Accent Minded. It's at 2200 West 19th Street, and it's has been opened by a guy named Roberto Guzman. And in Pilsen, the Guzman name is fairly famous because his parents have had a grocery store, Guzman Grocery, there for 31 years. And he's the youngest of seven, and he didn't really want to be in the small business world. So he was working at University of Chicago, but he liked to watch these TV shows like Pawn Stars, right?
Yeah.
And Pickers, and he liked to, which are basically shows about people buying used stuff and reselling them. So he thought, well, maybe I actually have the entrepreneurial spirit of my parents. So he has opened up this store, and it's a used furniture store. And he goes out and he hunts this stuff down at estate sales and auctions and Craigslist. And he's got a website, accentminded.com, which you can pretty much look at all his stuff. And,
it's awesome.
And it's very nice stuff. And people, if you're kind of stuck in thinking about Pilsen one way, it's not the same way anymore. It's has long been a sort of immigrant, blue-collar, Hispanic neighborhood, and it's still very Hispanic, but it's been changing rapidly in the past 10 years or so.
And what's the biggest difference now? What does the population look like?
Well, in 2000, Pilsen was about 90% Hispanic, and now it's down to about 80%. So they've lost 10,000 Hispanics since 2000, and whites are up 22%. So Pilsen, because of its reasonable rents and its reasonably priced real estate, is attracting young white Chicagoans. So they are, you know, they're always looking for more cheaper places to live, I guess, and so they are now heading for Pilsen, and things are changing in Pilsen to address this new market coming in.
What's, I think, great about the affordability of a neighborhood like Pilsen for certain people is that we want to hold talent and keep talent as much as we can in Chicago, and often people in the startup world, and they just can't afford to live in the city. And what I love about this story, too, is that it really turns the word entrepreneur, which is what you use to describe it. I think we've gotten caught in this loop of thinking of entrepreneurs as tech entrepreneurs and, you know, about to make $1 million. American entrepreneurs, the majority of them, are guys just like him, where they're actually small business owners making a go at it, and that is entrepreneurship at its best.
Well, he understands the neighborhood. He's of the generation of people coming in, and he understands how small businesses work by watching his parents. So he's got three things going for him, and I think he understands the market and, okay, who are these people and what do they need? Okay, they have apartments. They're going to need furniture, and he can provide furniture for them. And there's not, you know, there's not a lot of big box stores there. You can't just run over to the furniture store necessarily. And so he's come up with this niche, and he's trying to make a go of it, and he has a website which also appeals to the young people.
Sure.
So he's got something going on.
And speaking of big box stores, let's talk about what is going on over in Lincoln Square. You know, when I hear about Sears and being spared demolition, what's funny is my memory of Sears, as, and I'm completely dating myself, was the Sears catalog. It was a big event at our house. A Sears catalog would come. Sometimes it had clothes in it. Sometimes it had new appliances. And that was a really big deal. It was very thick. So what's going on now with the old Sears store?
So this is the big old Sears store on 1900 West Lawrence. And it's a big fortress-like place.
Right.
You know, it's 56,000 square feet. It was built in the 1920s. And somewhere along the line, they had the brilliant idea of bricking in the windows, which makes it even more hideous looking. Anyways.
Why? Why? You have to ask yourself, when that conversation, that meeting was taking place, who raised their hand and said, that's a great idea?
I think that you've seen a lot of these old Sears stores. Somewhere along the line, they decided people don't want to be bothered by looking outside, and that once you get them inside the store, it won't make them think about leaving. It's
like
kind of like
Vegas,
the mall.
Or Vegas.
The mall concept was you would go in and you'd be in this sort of environment and you'd never want to leave. So anyway, people have wanted to leave, and so they stopped going to Sears. And so they have this huge building, and the alderman there, Amaya Pawar, says he wants to reuse it, and he's got a real estate developer, Springbank, who has come up with a plan, and it has 40 apartments in it and 32,000 square feet of retail, and they've unbricked the windows, or they're going to. That's the plan, and it looks great.
I kind of love this about Chicago. If you really pay attention when you walk around, in my neighborhood, we've got a couple synagogues that have stayed intact. I mean, the outside, you can still see the stained glass window. They're now housing, but at least they kept the buildings intact. And I think that it's a really great part of our history. I mean, Motorola, we're going to have a guest on in a little bit to talk about what's going into the Motorola building on Chicago Ave. I think it's a good thing for our city's culture.
Well, looking at the renderings, and we have them posted at dnainfo.com, but I was asking the reporter, Patty Wetley, who covers Lincoln Square, when she was telling me about this, I said, why would anybody want to save that building? And she says, this actually has some good bones, as they say. And when
it's
look at these renderings, she's right. It's really cool looking.
That's awesome. Andrew Herman, DNA Info, who's wearing, by the way, a fabulous shirt.
Which I got at Goodwill.
Did you?
Yes, it's a Lord & Taylor shirt that I got at Goodwill. It's, so I may be 56, but I think like a young person.
It's very special.
All right.
So thanks for coming in. Coming up after the break, we have Bill Finup, who's the founder of Catalyze, who's going to tell us about what's going to be happening in that old Motorola. Did I really just say that? Motorola building. So let's take a quick break. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Suzanne Muchen. I am sitting in for Steve Bertrand, who is on the mend. I don't know. There's lots of rumors. Maybe people are even taking bets which day he's coming back. So, Steve, come back. So, I love talking about some of the new trends in entrepreneurship in Chicago. And, you know, we think of entrepreneurs. We were, Andrew and I, just talking about the small business entrepreneur, the tech entrepreneur. But there's a whole new wave of entrepreneurs coming up. And we have Bill Finup in the studio right now. He is the founder of Catalyze. And, Bill, describe what Catalyze is and, importantly, how it got started.
Sure. So Catalyze Chicago is a co-working space and incubator for entrepreneurs that are developing and manufacturing products. So we focus on the physical world. We have plenty of tools like laser cutters, 3D printers, CNC equipment, and an electronics lab where people can prototype, experiment, and iterate and manufacture their product.
And there's, you would call some of those people makers.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And I hear that term tossed around. Yeah. What does it really mean to be a maker?
So I think the term maker is changing. I think now it's more respected to be a maker. It's becoming a professional career. When you get access to these types of resources, you can run a business being a maker.
Right. It's not just somebody who tinkers around.
And I think it used to be. You know, it used to be a hacker, someone who was in their basement, maybe an inventor in a garage. And
right.
I think that term is transforming, you know, when you've got crowdfunding campaigns that are supporting these ideas and financing them.
Absolutely. And you're hearing things coming off of a 3D printer that are sort of mind-blowing,
yeah.
Right?
The 3D printers helped a lot. I mean, it's very easy to rapidly prototype and iterate and see if your idea or product works before you have to go manufacture it.
So Catalyze tapped into an already existing interest, it seemed, from a lot of people in the field, in and around manufacturing and the
yes.
maker movement. What do you think it tapped into? Because it's kind of got started organically.
Yeah, so very much so. There's been a community in Chicago called Maker Biz, and it's a community of makers that are also launching businesses. And it's been an online forum, and they meet, you know, once a month. But there was no central home for those people to co-work, and there was no shared facility. And so I think that was the birth of Catalyze Chicago. You know, there was six founders of Catalyze, and we all had similar struggles being entrepreneurs that needed access to machines
for
and
sure.
tools and manufacturers, you know, and investors that are willing to dabble in hardware.
And one thing you told me, which I love, is that this community really responds to each other, that all mm-hmm. day long there's this kind of ongoing dialogue when people have questions or, you know, want to get in contact with someone. Why, first of all, is that true? Is the community that supportive?
It is very much so. You hear people yelling out solutions to problems, you know, throughout the day in the office.
That's so awesome.
It's very collaborative.
Very different than I think what people think of when they, you know, you picture somebody in front of a computer,
mm-hmm.
head down, you know, headset on. So what do you think has been tapped into with that kind of a community mindset?
I think it's just this community hasn't gotten the support that it deserves, and people are willing to help each other out. You know, even on the MakerBiz list, you get 5 or 10 people answering a question about, you know, which supplier should I use for this particular process? You know, or answering simple stuff like who's the best accountant in the area, or, you know, what type of legal services do I need
right.
at this stage?
Right. And tell me about one of your favorite companies that's in the space. I know that we're going to be talking in a minute to Mike Infinger, who's with Verena Solutions. But can you tell us something that would help me picture a particular kind of company
yeah.
that's at Catalyze?
So there's a company called Newton, and they have this small wearable device that straps to your forehead. And when you're playing a sport with a lot of collisions,
oh, right.
like football or soccer, this device monitors those collisions and reports them to coaches. And if there's a very high impact, you know, the coach receives the data and then can perform a concussion test on that individual
That's
player.
That's so cool. So they're actually making the physical product.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. Bill Finup, who's a founder of Catalyze. It's a really fascinating movement. And if you haven't seen some of these companies, definitely worth taking a look at. So, Bill, you can even stay while we have your buddy Mike coming in a minute. And we'll be back after this short break. Welcome back. I'm Suzanne Muchen. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. We were just talking before the break to Bill Finup, who's a founder of Catalyze, one of the founders. And as we were breaking, I said, you know what, it's really worth going over there to take a look at what we mean by this maker movement, manufacturing, entrepreneurship. And in fact, you can. So they're at 650 West Lake. They give tours, and there's even one today at 530. So definitely worth, if you're interested in that at all, if you've never seen a 3D printer, very interesting to go check it out. So we're going to keep on this topic right now because we have Mike Infinger in the studio, who's the founder of Verena Solutions. And Mike, why I love that you're here is because it sounds like you're solving one of my biggest pain points of my life. Tell us what's going on and why you're going to save us all.
Well, there's two main issues that we're looking at. The first, I think, and the premise of it, when I was at Marquette University, I had a number of friends who were in dental school, and through drinks and going to parties and things like that, you come to find that there's a lot of issues that haven't changed in the last 30 years. One of the big ones is dealing with needles.
Right.
It turns out dentists hate them almost as much as you do, and it's actually a pretty substantial cost both to the dentist and insurance company throughout the year. And so it dawned on us, well, why don't we see if we can do something about that? Along the way, maybe we could help solve something that patients hate as well.
And so the needle itself, tell me why that's cost so much money.
So the needle itself is cheap. When you have a percutaneous injury, a PI is what they're called, there's a requirement by OSHA to go to the hospital or urgent care center, both the dentist and the patient. That can range anywhere from $500 to $3,500, depending on the hospital. You add that up for a large group practice or a dental school over the course of a year, you're in close to $100 million.
Oh my
and
God.
That really drives up premiums for everybody. So as a patient, as a buyer of insurance, it should be something that everybody cares about.
So what is the solution in Verena Solutions?
The solution is anything that is simpler, faster, and also, happens to be safer as well. So what we found with dentists, and I think this is true of most professionals and people, the direct safety play is important, but what people care about is ease of business and ease of life. So our goal is to make things that are a simpler solution and happen to solve these other problems.
And who's the market? Who are you selling? Who's the customer?
So the customer are individual dentists, dental schools. There's a big sea change in the market going from individual practices to what are called DSO, or dental management companies. So dentists right now are actually getting out of school and then going into these businesses for a variety of reasons. They buy in bulk. So we're actually going after these groups as well because they'll have risk management profiles, and they're really trying to bring down those long-term costs.
And it's so interesting. You said earlier that it's a field that's very slow to change.
That's correct.
And we do feel that way. I mean, when I go to the dentist today, it's the same chair. It feels like it smells the same. Why is it so hard to create an entrepreneurial solution in that environment?
I think there's two reasons. I think one is that dentists for the longest time and medical doctors were like this for many years, operated as individual practices. So it's very hard to attack 200,000 or 300,000 individuals and sell to them. They all have different buying mechanisms. I think the second thing is people in general don't like to go to the dentist. And so you just don't see a lot of startups in that field. You don't think about, you know what I really want to change?
Right.
This thing I hate.
Right. It does always boggle my mind why you would choose to become a doctor where all day long you're simply seeing people who don't want to be
right
there. Right?
It's and you leave oftentimes with your face, even if you get a positive procedure,
yeah,
your face often hurts more than when you got there.
Right.
So you've had this negative feeling going long after you just dread it.
Okay, you're solving all of that.
We're trying to. Our long-term goal
was that a little lofty that I said you're solving that entire problem?
I don't think so at all.
Okay.
I think our long-term goals, when you look at anesthetic delivery, the needle is terrible, right? So
yeah.
The first step, our opening salvo, is something that makes it safer, maybe covers it up a bit. The goal long term is to come up with something that makes it so when you go to the dentist, that anesthetic delivery is the best part of your procedure.
Wow.
Maybe you're actually helping to deliver it yourself.
Wow.
Now, we've got some things we're working on that are a bit longer term. We might not necessarily be a catalyzed at that point, but there's a lot of room for improvement, I think.
So you're at Catalyze now.
Right.
Where were you before you were at Catalyze?
My basement.
And that's really very typical, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what is the benefit to you? What does it feel like to be over at Catalyze versus on your own?
Well, I mean, I can say that I was listening into the conversation before. What Bill said is right on. I mean, you've got a group of people that are like-minded. You're not solving the same problem, but you're going at it in the same way. Building a physical device is very different from a piece of software. There's a lot of questions that come up that are very unique to that space. And people, like you said, will oftentimes, I'll lean over and go, you know what, you're an expert in this. What would you recommend for this area? And then just board it out.
That's so cool.
It's fantastic.
I think that people tend to think of entrepreneurs as these very competitive, you know, don't touch my thing. And it seems important to actually rethink entrepreneurs as people who feel like they're part of a movement, like trying to do something that matters. And so when you're over at Catalyze, you use the machinery there? Like, what's the stuff?
So we have our own MakerBot, our own 3D printer there, but we also use the other ones on site. We use a few of the other systems they have. And a lot of it is just, looking at the individual tools. So they'll have drills, saws, presses. You find there's a way to create prototypes in a way that you could not. People think of 3D printing. Well, there's so much more than that.
Yep.
And Catalyze has a lot of these other tools that you can use to combine that together to make one system.
Love it. Mike Infinger, Verena Solutions. And are you on the tour, 650 Wet? Like, could we see you today?
I'll be there, absolutely.
Okay, I feel like that's important to know that you could actually see Mike on the tour.
You can see the needles and maybe take an injection if you're so inclined.
It's fantastic. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, then we'll be back to wrap up the show.